Well, we continue this third Sunday in the season of Lent with our tour through the gospel narratives that tell us the story of Jesus' life and love and purpose for our ministry in very different ways and in different contexts for different sets of people. Today, the Holy Gospel according to St. Luke. It's dated similarly to the gospel attributed to Matthew, some 50 or 60 years, or perhaps in this case, maybe 70 plus years after Jesus' death. And Luke is, in fact, identified in the Acts of the Apostles. He's referred to as the beloved physician who is a companion of St. Paul. So far, all three of these gospel writers, Mark was similarly identified, and the person to whom Matthew's gospel was attributed, are followers of the apostles who collected stories and sayings. And Luke also used Mark and Matthew and some of the sources that contributed to Matthew's gospel. So in sequence, we have a more complete, somewhat more complex, but also uniquely different story of Jesus' life. Luke is also the first half of that author's work that appears in the New Testament. The author of the Gospel of Luke also wrote the Acts of the Apostles. Both of them were written to someone who is known as Theophilus. He says this explicitly. The first verse in the book of Acts is, "In the first book, O Theophilus, I told you about Jesus' life. Now here are about the Acts of the Apostles." Well, we don't know who Theophilus is. There are about 10 different theories running all the way from a Jewish priest to a Roman soldier and everywhere in between. The larger point, however, Theophilus in Greek means friend of God, which I guess we would like to think that's us. So let's presume for a moment that the book is written to us explicitly. The gospel's uncommonly friendly. There are people stories that are more relatable than in most of the other gospels. And scholars think that this particular version of Jesus' life was meant to be read as the followers got together to celebrate the Lord's Supper, which is what we continue to do. We continue to read from the Gospels as we worship, and maybe especially today. It's referred to in the literature as the universal gospel, distinct in some way from Matthew's Jewish gospel. There's a much more outreach theme to Luke's work, starting at the very beginning. There's a genealogy that tells us who Jesus was the son of and whose son that was and so forth. And it traces it not just back to David and Abraham, but Jesus' genealogy in Luke is traced back to Adam, the first human. So the implication here is that Jesus is the descendant and then the forebear of all humankind. Jesus' lineage goes back to Adam. Jesus' birth story is a little more complex. Mary and Joseph are travelers. They are not in Bethlehem. They travel to Bethlehem. So there's this sort of coming from afar, outreach kind of a thing alluded to even in the Christmas story. But more importantly, there are a couple of distinctions. And in some ways, we have to talk about Luke in light of Matthew and Mark to show how different it is and what those differences mean. Matthew gives us the Beatitudes. Luke gives us also, but of a slightly different tone. Matthew says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall see God." Luke, writing with a decidedly outreach and purposeful difference, says, not "blessed are the poor in spirit," but "blessed are the poor." That's it, implying an imperative to ministry. Matthew also says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." Luke says instead, "Blessed are those who hunger now." Again, an imperative in the here and now to reach out. The Good Samaritan is unique in Luke's gospel, one of perhaps the two most famous parables in Jesus' life, explicitly puts a dichotomy between the religious elite and the outcast and elevates the outcast from a foreign country as quite literally neighbor to those in need. So that's unique and highlights this gospel of outreach. But more interesting, or equally interesting perhaps I should say, are two illustrative stories of people we only hear of in the book of Acts. also highlighting the outreach. There's a Roman centurion named Cornelius. Now again, Roman centurions are the guardians of the occupiers, right? Well, Cornelius runs into the Apostle Peter and learns the story of Jesus' life and love and asks, "Can you baptize people like me?" And Peter baptizes Cornelius immediately, and he becomes not just a follower of Jesus in that sense, but illustrative of, again, who's included in the club here? Cornelius, the Roman soldier, is baptized. Later in the book of Acts, a character identified only as the Ethiopian eunuch comes into the company of the Apostle Philip. Again, here's the story, and asks, "What is to prevent me from being baptized?" The Ethiopian eunuch from Ethiopia, probably of much darker skin tone and heritage. And eunuch, you know, someone who's been ritually disfigured to serve the queen without compromise. Certainly someone who's the masculine-feminine continuum is a little fuzzy with this guy. So the Ethiopian eunuch asks, "What is to prevent me from being baptized?" Philip baptizes him. These are part of the consistent imagery in what I would call the gospel of outreach. Who gets in? Anyone who asks, as it turns out. The other of Jesus' perhaps most famous parables appears only in Luke, and it is the prodigal son. And everybody knows this story because everybody knows these people. We know reprobates in our family, community, and it really annoys us when they kind of get away with it, doesn't it? You know, because we all can hear the elder brother say, "You know what? What's with the party for this guy? I've been your faithful son forever," and etc. You know the deal. Well, there's this, I think, profoundly touching moment when the father takes the elder brother aside and says, "Look, nothing has changed between you and me. You're my faithful son and I love you. But hear this, your brother, and I know, I get it, but he's back. Why shouldn't we celebrate the moment? Nobody knows what's going to happen next, but he's back now. And I love you and I love him. Let's have a party. Why not? You know? What's the harm?" And perhaps even there might come some good from this. Once again, who gets included and on what basis? The prodigal son is something to celebrate and takes nothing away from what's always true about the elder brother. I think most profoundly, Luke gives us not just outreach imperative, but also hope for the journey. In some of the key distinctions that show up in Jesus' crucifixion narrative. Go back a couple of weeks. The crucifixion narrative in Mark has Jesus saying one thing and one thing only, and it is a lament of despair. Jesus is abandoned. He's alone. He's not even sure why it's the case. He simply cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And it, in Mark's gospel, shows us how deeply entrenched is the human Jesus to the totality of the human condition. Now, in Luke, some very interesting distinctions. Two others also who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him. And the criminals, one on the left and one on the right. And Jesus said, the first words he says from the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." It's almost like he gets it in a way distinct from the other gospels. He knows this is a means to an end and that the people who are doing this to him don't know. And they're almost, in a sense, instruments of what has to happen. So he says, first, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Short time later, one of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you're under the same sentence of condemnation, and we justly?" And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingly power." And he says, famously, "Today you shall be with me in paradise." So his next act from the cross is to explicitly grant salvation to one of the thieves crucified with him. I remember hearing this when I was a kid, and I'm going, well, what about the other guy? Did he, in effect, prevent himself from being saved because of his rebuke of Jesus? I don't know. Jesus doesn't say. But if you look at these two men in the same way we look at the prodigal son and the elder brother and ask the question, who gets saved? You have to say to yourself, well, I don't know, but why not? Again, the tone of inclusivity and outreach shows up even here. And then in the next verse, it was now about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the land, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, crying with a loud voice, as he did in Mark, but crying something very different. Crying with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. So his understanding of who his Father is at the moment of his death is not the one who abandoned him, but the one who will receive him back and has his complete and utter trust. Jesus knows what's going on. He's completely in control. He has illustrated with the tormentors and the thief that the work is accomplished. Very different. In other words, he's saying, by and large, who knows what good can come from this, but the Father, into whose hands I commit my spirit, join me in that spirit, and we'll get through this. Some good will come from this. And Jesus knew that ultimate good would come from his death. Some good will come from this. This is the gospel of outreach and hope. The Holy Gospel, according to St. Luke. Amen.